All right, good to see you this morning. I'm Carl. I'm Marlena's dad, and we're happy that Marlena, Trey, Drew, Brooke, Wesley, and Daniel are all here with you. We're thankful to be in Georgia. This is beautiful. It's good to know you. We are on a pilgrimage together and get to meet more people, and it's so encouraging that others have the same faith, others have the same fellowship with God. We're thankful that we could spend time together right now with God in His Word. If you want to, turn to Luke chapter 16. I'm going to lower this just a little bit. And I was happy to step on my toes to see some of you over the microphone. I was born in Texas, raised in Oklahoma, spent time in Florida, Indiana, New Mexico, Colorado, back to Texas. But I want you to know it's not important where we're from. It's important where we're going. And when Jesus teaches this in Luke chapter 16, he's trying to get his disciples to focus on where they're going. And he's going to talk about material stewardship, and some might think that doesn't relate to them because they say, I don't have much. But whether you're young or old, whether you live in a castle or a tent, if your mode of transportation is a luxury car or it's the original mode of transportation, that is feet, this lesson is for you. I want you to see that Jesus speaks to his disciples, but yet he is speaking also for those who might hear the Pharisees. They are in the distance, and they're hearing what Jesus says, and they are interested, but they are also skeptical. They are indignant towards Jesus, and when this message is given in Luke chapter 16, Jesus is really trying to help them too. He's willing to help those who are his detractors. Jesus wants to save, and even to the point of the cross, when Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, Jesus is willing to save his enemies. Jesus is after souls, and he wants us to have a heart for God. And in this case, he wants us to have a heart for God with everything of which we have materially, every material opportunity of which we have. So it's not about just great wealth, and we see the word wealth used here, but it really refers to anything which is material. And we'll note that our bodies are material, that which we consume, it's material, much of which we have in transactions as far as jobs is material. Those things are what God tells us can be directed towards Him in order that we might be successful spiritually. So he translates that which is material into an opportunity for us to have spiritual success. Jesus mastered this. Jesus gave us the example by which we are to live. For instance, when Jesus met the woman at the well who was from Samaria with just a drink of water, Jesus translated that into a spiritual conversation. Water is material. So you can take just a drink of water and you can get traction with spiritual success if you know how to do it. And I believe this parable of which we'll read, Luke chapter 16, is going to help us. In Luke chapter 16 and verse 1, he also said to the disciples, there was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. And he called him and said to him, what is this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager. And the manager said to himself, what shall I do since my master is taking the management away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do, so that when I am removed from management, people may receive me into their houses. So, summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, how much do you owe my master? He said, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, take your bill and, sir, he says, down quickly and write 50, or sit down quickly and write 50. I put on a separate set of glasses this morning, so I'm having a little bit difficult time reading. but I'll read that again. He said, 100 measures of oil, he said to him, take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, how much do you owe? He said, 100 measures of wheat. He said to him, take your bill and write 80. The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings. All right, here's the story. You've got this man that's a steward. He's in charge of his master's goods, and he's supposed to make a profit with that, but what he's been doing is dishonest. He's actually broken his trust with his master, and his master catches him at it, and he says, "You're fired." So the man says, "What am I going to do now?" He says, "Am I going to dig? Am I going to beg?" He says, "I don't want to do those things." He says, "What I'll do is I'll find some of these clients that are still active with me in the business, and I'm going to ask them what they owe my master, and I'm going to write them a discount." So this again is dishonest. So everything here is stacked upon dishonesty. Here's someone that by hook or crook, that by world savviness, they're willing to make a living, carve out an existence on earth at whatever it cost. And even the master, when he looks at that, he says, "You know, that was pretty sharp." In other words, when the world looks at things which are just based on godless survival, the world will even admire when something looks pretty impressive. The master says that was pretty impressive. He's still fired, but he says that was pretty impressive. But Jesus is using this as an example, and Jesus gives us exactly what we're supposed to learn here. When he says in, again, verse 8, he says, "The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world," he says, "are more shrewd in dealing with their own generations than the sons of light." So he says we're to learn something from this shrewd servant, this shrewd steward. He says, because it is going to teach us a lesson, verse 9, "And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings." This is the point. He says that we take material opportunities and we make the right friends. We make material opportunities and we direct it toward God and we direct it toward an eternal home. That's in contrast to this steward who's called sometimes the unjust steward, who took his material opportunities and he was self-serving. He was short-sighted. His focus was an earthly home, an earthly dwelling, earthly comforts. It was sort of like the Ecclesiastes experience in the Old Testament, where it's vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That's a person where takes that which is life under the sun, and he says, "Okay, this is my existence, and I'm going to become expert, and I'm going to enjoy comfort, and I'm going to enjoy labor, I'm going to enjoy recreation, entertainment, I'm going to enjoy food, and I'll do this until basically it fizzles." And at some point it fizzles. That's when it becomes vanity. We've done all that. We're just like the gerbil that's in the wheel over and over and over. And then at the end we're saying, "What have we got?" We've got nothing, absolutely nothing. He's saying that we need to make the right friends, that is God, that friend is able to accommodate us eternally with a home in heaven. That needs to be our drive. If we are simply taking our material opportunities and we are using those for the here and now, he says, you've missed it. He's telling us that there's a problem with even Christians. And that's probably shocking, because most people would say, "Well, I've got the right values. I'm living for heaven." But speaking to his disciples here, and then those who are within earshot, are a very conservative, pious group of Pharisees. And they think they have honed in on the correct focus too. But when they hear Jesus' points, they are very upset with Jesus. And that's because he says that they are lovers of money, lovers of wealth, lovers of money. And or we'd say mammon, as it's used in some translations there. And someone says, "Well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with things?" There's nothing wrong with things. Things of themselves are not evil. What's wrong with those things is when we, of course, affix our hearts to them. And the difficulty with the Pharisee, and with most of the Jews, I think, and even Jesus' disciples, is that they measured their closeness to God by how many material things they were blessed with. And so they would think in the Old Testament of Job. Remember at the beginning of the book of Job, how that he's got those thousands of livestock, and he's got 10 children, everything is all and well. And then when all of that is taken from Job and he loses it, he's sitting there basically trying to, in his numbness, absorb everything that's just happened. His friends show up and they're saying, "Well, you must have really ticked off God in some ugly, evil way for him to cause you to be so poor and so devastated and poor in health. And they kept pushing this on him and saying, you need to think back and you need to come clean with that, because if you are acting correctly, your life will have luxury. And now that's been taken away from you. So that's kind of the same concept. The children of Israel went into the promised land. They're told if they keep the commandments of the Lord, they'll receive their inheritance and that it will not be taken away from them and that they will prosper. So their mindset is, by circumstantial evidence, we look around, and if things are looking up, we're close to God. So that was sort of a natural thing. But Jesus is saying that looks can be deceptive. And then he follows up this parable with another about the rich man and Lazarus to show that outcomes are not always represented by what we observe beforehand. You had the rich man that was in his comfort. You had the poor man, Lazarus, that he's eating the crumbs off the table. And then afterwards, we see that the rich man's in torment. And of course, Lazarus is in Abraham's bosom. Jesus says, be careful. Looks can be deceiving. They can be very deceiving. And so someone says, what's that got to do with me? I believe that Jesus gives basically five reasons here why we need to direct every material opportunity to God. And maybe sometimes we say indirectly or directly. I'll give you an example. For instance, two things stand out with me with raising my son, number five. Okay, that is shoes and a soccer ball. Because both of those were often replaced. And I think they kind of go hand in hand, right? And I mean, this kid could wear out a pair of shoes in 2-3 months. And we used to think every year you get a new pair of shoes when I was a kid, not with this child. The other thing is a soccer ball, because he would just torture a soccer ball. I mean, he would just kick it into a goal. He's kicking it into rocks and barbed wire fences. It doesn't matter. He's just over the top. I mean, this kid is not just off the wall, he's off the ceiling when it comes to those kinds of things, very aggressive. And someone says, what does a soccer ball have to do with material management? It has everything to do with it. Number one, it's material. Number two, I'm in charge of this child, just like Jesus, that he grew in wisdom, stature, and favor with God and man. As a parent, I'm to train my child up in the way of the Lord. When he's old, he'll not depart from it. That raise him in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And all of this is part of who he is. And for me, at this point of his life, that soccer ball is key to him understanding his identity and for him to mature using a material item so that he can find spiritual success. Just a soccer ball, okay? I believe we can do that with everything. I got through with this sermon one time. Some guy says, well, what's that got to do with, you know, a blackberry cobbler? And I said, it's food, isn't it? Okay, food fuels me. I'm about God. I'm about spiritual things that are going to be accomplished with this physical body. Bring on the dessert, okay? Everything. I believe we can point to anything that's material and put it into this picture, and even our physical bodies. It's important that we look at Jesus' reasons why. And so we'll see that now in Luke chapter 16. In verse 10, he says, one who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much. And one who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. He's talking about stewardship. The stewardship at hand is material stewardship. He says, if you can't find who you are with your material things and how that relates to God, he says, you really have nowhere else to go, because that's sort of the elementary step. That is that we have physical things of which we have to relate to God. In the Old Testament, under the law of Moses, the first two commands, that you would not bow down to any other god, that you would not build any graven image, you're not going to craft something and then you're going to worship it. Really what that came down to is that we don't worship and serve that which is created. We worship and serve the Creator. That's what we do. But God does not share his throne with anything that is created. And those are the two things which began the Ten Commandments. And really that's the concept that goes into Christianity too. It's the concept that existed with the patriarchs. as Abraham came into the promised land, of course, what he's doing is worshiping his God. He's not embracing those things that are in the promised land. The Israelites, though, they came into the promised land and they abandoned God for that which was material. They're like, well, we love this. God who? Who's God? Who is our God? And then they embraced the gods of the land of Canaan. And you can see where when Jesus is saying, we need to be faithful. We need to show that we trust God. Our family, I believe, immediately has a take on if we trust God more than our possessions. Our family knows where we stand on that. I believe that our neighbors, the people who are acquaintances that observe us, whether in the neighborhood or whether at work, I believe they have a take on this right now. If we are owned by material things, it could be by some retirement plan, it could be by our car, it could be by even relationships other than God, but they know if we're owned by something other than God. And he's saying that we need to show ourselves to be faithful. The reason why is because this is a matter of salvation. Someone might think, well, what's this got to do with a soccer ball? A soccer ball can be part of the picture of which is a matter of salvation. God is saying here, if we're not faithful in those things which are the least, we're not going to be faithful in something that's greater. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, verse 11, he says, who will entrust you with the true riches? In other words, the true riches, and I believe he's talking about the true riches or the spiritual things of which we should hold to. The true riches would be that which is like the word. It would be like peace, joy. It would be a fellowship that we have with Christians. A true riches would be the harmony that we have with brethren. It might be serving as an evangelist, a teacher, a deacon, an elder. It could be that the true riches are the relationship that we have with our children and with our grandchildren. That is that we want this child to trust God more than they trust any material thing. But what we want beyond that is we want to have a relationship with this child which is eternal. And I'll digress one point, and that is that I believe one of the greatest evidences of God and the existence of God is that he gives us a relationship which will never end. A relationship which will never end. Whereas the atheist, every relationship that they have comes to a screeching halt, and it's bitter, and it's shocking, and it's brutal. And God is telling us that material items, that they are part of relationships. A few years back, I attended the funeral of a man that had died at age 95, and what they put up on the speaker stand was a pair of boots that he wore when he was 2. Okay? I had never seen the boots, but I knew the man. It just struck a chord in me when I saw these boots because my life flashed before me, not because of the boots, but because of the relationship I had with the man. A few years ago, we went to the city of Branson, Missouri, and across the river is a place called Hollister, and they have there like a 3-story flea market. And all my relatives, they want to go to the flea market. And I said, okay, I'll go. And, you know, 3 stories of all these antiques and relics, and it took me nearly 10 minutes to see them all. Why is that? Because all of those antiques don't mean anything to me. Whereas I've got the watch. My father worked on the railroad. It's a Hamilton Railway Special watch in my possession. That means the world to me. Why is it? It's because of the relationship. Material items are memorabilia for relationship, if I can get that out in my congestion. The concept is not the item. I can go to a watch store and see all kinds of watches and they mean nothing to me. This one means something to me because of the relationship. Do you see how key every material opportunity is to relationship? And how that if I'm buying or selling, if I'm at work and doing something with my hands, that others are observing me, and that we have interaction constantly with people, with material things, and God is saying every opportunity must be directed towards Him. In other words, I look through a lens which is spiritual, even though I'm working with material opportunities. Even when I'm driving my car, I'm thinking, okay, this is dangerous. You know, somebody could get hurt here, and I'm being careful about that. And when someone cuts me off and I let them come on in, or when I cut somebody off and they honk at me and I go ahead and wave, I'm like, sorry, neighbor. And I'm thinking we had some kind of material interaction here, but we want this to be directed towards God, not be directed towards, well, don't hit my car. When my other daughter, one of my other daughters, was six, she carved some words on the side of our minivan with a rock, okay? And that's painful for a dad. But she got in trouble. And that was hard because what she wrote on the side of the minivan was dad, okay? And I was all worried about the minivan. You know, like, we're still making payments on this thing. But here 30 years later, you know what I'm concerned about? Not the minivan. What am I concerned about? The relationship with my daughter. And that's priceless. And Jesus is saying that with that which is called unrighteous mammon, unrighteous wealth, he says, you can take something that is disposed to evil by most of the world. They're more obsessed with that. He says, you can take that and get traction spiritually. And what you get is relationship. Relationship with God. Relationship with others. It's not about the object. Somebody says, well, I retired from my job and all they gave me was this gold watch. If that's all you got from your job, then shame on you. Because it was supposed to be an opportunity for me to have interaction with others to get spiritual traction. The watch would be great. I'll take the watch. But really what I should be coming away from every one of those experiences with is that I have been enriched by relationship and I invested myself. And sometimes it was reciprocal. And when it's reciprocal, it's just outstanding. But all of this is that which is going to draw me closer to God. Let's continue here there. Luke chapter 16. What he says in verse 12. And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. So the first thing of which he points out is you're dealing with something that's not yours. It's like playing the game of Monopoly that you might win, but when the game's over, it all goes back in the box. And you're saying, I'm rich, I won. And then after the box closes, you're nothing. Okay, who are you then? When it comes to life, we do not touch a single item once we're dead. I have been to another funeral, which the gentleman had a smartwatch, and so his grandchildren were deciding who was going to get the smartwatch because he couldn't touch it anymore. We're not going to have these opportunities. He says, what does it do? He says, as in a stewardship, those things are returned to the master. It's back to God. So when we die, we return to the dust from which we came and the spirit unto God who gave it. And we're like, here we are. All we stand before God with is our spirit and our record. Do we have a relationship with God or not? Did we use those material opportunities to direct them towards God? He says, we need to understand that we are stewards. We can't take it with us, but yet some live as if they can. Another thing of which he points out here is that you cannot serve God and money. Some think this is where you put compartments in your life. That you have God and religion here, and then you have material things over here. And the two, they really don't interlock. And so on Sunday, they worship God. On Monday, they are obsessed to the point of abusing others with their pursuit of material things. And so when you see Jesus saying some had that compartment in their mind, he refers to an example, verse 14, to the Pharisees. The Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all these things, and they ridiculed him, and they said to him, "You are those who justify themselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is exalted among men is an abomination in the sight of God." He's saying, you want to get close to God on your terms. And that's part of the teaching in the next two sentences, where he's talking about that they would divorce their wife. They would do what they wanted to do and say, this is righteousness before God. And this is how we're going to be in the kingdom of God. In other words, we've created our own level of success and how we measure it. And we can do what we want. He says, you have this thing 180 degrees opposite of what it should be. And you need to get a hold of yourself. And I believe we need to do that sometimes as Christians. And it's humbling for us looking at material things sometimes is a point of which we think success is going to be defined by how we do materially, how much money we're able to save or how much we're going to be able to get in a deal if we get the better end of a deal. I've got a friend, Chuck, and Chuck, he told me, he says, yeah, I traded cars. I said, well, how'd you come out on that? He says, you know, I really don't care. I said, what? He says, they shot a price to me. I was okay with it. We went with it. We've got a vehicle. We like it. And we still like the guy that sold it to us. I'm like, what? You know, that's not how I was wired. I was wired that you've got to win in these trades. Okay, if you don't win, you haven't conquered. You don't have success. That's not what he was after. Chuck is a young Christian. And I'm like, you've already grasped that? That is so impressive. Chuck is not young chronologically. I baptized Chuck when he was 60 some odd years old. But yet Chuck was young in Christ. And he had already grasped that. It's exciting that when we think about what we accomplish for God and the fact that all of it is going to show that material things are subservient to God and it works. Jesus is saying, grasp this. But if we try to make it a balance or we put it into two different compartments, he says you're serving two masters at the same time and trying to somehow or another balance. You can't do it. He says, God and God alone will be served. He said, similarly, the same thing in the Sermon on the Mount. You're probably thinking of that no man can serve two masters. So here's the deal. If we're saying it's two compartments, I clock out on Sunday, then on Monday, I'm into my material world, and then I'm going to take lessons from a world-savvy, unjust steward, and I'm really going to knock it out. Okay? It'll be like gangbusters. And I'm not going to let my thoughts about worshiping God and prayer interfere with this. This is what I'm attending to. Get out of my way. He says, if you're doing that, that's your master. That is your master. Your heart's where your treasure is. He says, that's your master. No man can serve two masters. We need to decide right now that every material opportunity is going to be subservient to God. So five things. I said 5 points. I'll give you a review real quickly. The first of which, we're stewards. Everything returns to God. The second of which is that we make friends with God with every material opportunity. That is because God is the only one that can award us with an eternal home. So we're seeking heaven by making friends with God by material opportunities. We see that third is a matter of salvation. It's not something of which someone says, well, don't worry too much about material things. Just think about how intent you are in worship of God. He said, if you're not really, you know, able to accomplish material things so that they're directed towards God, it doesn't matter what you do in the pew because you've failed in idolatry. You've already failed in that. Then he says that you're going to be sure that you have the same intensity for this drive, the same intensity as that unjust steward. Remember how intense that unjust steward was so that he could have comforts of an earthly home? What did he do? He went out and made these side deals with these other clients. And he says, I'm going to cover my bases. And he got with it. He's not like the guy that said, okay, I just got laid off and I'm going to wait till the unemployment runs out and then I'll start looking for work. Or looking for some income source. And that's not good stewardship, by the way. this unjust steward was the opposite. So what he's focused on in Jesus is not the unjust steward's ability to, by hook or crook, with world-savvy tactics, carve out a living. He says, this is the lesson I want you to learn from him. The level of intensity of which he pursued his earthly goal, he says, we who are the sons of light need to have the same level of intensity to say, this is it. We're going to knock that out of the park. And then fourth, what we see is that this is a matter of which we have true riches. The accomplishment is that we don't have to give it back. Like at the end of the game of Monopoly, you put it back in the box. What we get is that which is ours to keep. You don't have to return it. This is the stewardship of which he says, now you gain the spiritual things which you do not have to return. And then fifth, we see that he says, no man can serve two masters. He says, make up your mind right now what's going to be first. What is going to be first and foremost in your life is that you have bowed your knee to Jesus and to say, everything of which I have, every opportunity of which I have, he says, Jesus is king. Jesus is king. I'm going to bow my knee and Jesus is king over all that. I'm through preaching now. Thank you for listening. We're going to stand and sing the song of encouragement. Of course, we would serve you in any way if you want to obey the gospel or if you want to be served by this congregation. Let us stand and sing.